Welcome to Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda. I'm Jenny, and I'm coming to you from the past, broadcasting from the hot California desert. I'm here to tell you about what's playing at home this week in the lush, green, beautiful Hudson Valley. Starting with Story Screen Cinema, located on Fairview Avenue, we have The Shrouds, the new film from David Cronenberg, Sinners, Thunderbolts, Final Destination Bloodlines, and Clown in a Cornfield. If you're interested in any of these showtimes or any additional information, you can find out more at storyscreenpresents.com. Next, we have the Spotlight Theater, also in Hudson, also on Fairview Avenue. We have Clown in a Cornfield, The Surfer, Thunderbolts, The Accountant 2, Until Dawn, A Minecraft Movie, The Ballad of Wallace Island, and Sinners. And if you're interested in any additional information or those showtimes, you can find out more at spotlighttheater.com, and just make sure to select Hudson from the drop-down menu. Staying in Hudson, we have Time and Space Limited, otherwise known as TSL. This weekend, they have The Shrouds, Gaslight, The Great Dictator, The Gospel According to Matthew, Ministry of Fear, and Gold Rush. And if you're interested in any of those movies, their showtimes, or any additional information about what's happening at TSL, you can find out more information at timeandspace.org. Heading across the river, we have at the Wyndham Theater, Thunderbolts, The Accountant 2, and A Minecraft Movie. And if you're interested in any additional information about what's happening over there, you can find out more information at wyndhamtheater.com. Heading over to Coxsackie, the Highway Drive-In is now open, so I can tell you about what's playing over there. It's a four-screen drive-in, and each screen has two films. So on screen one, we have Thunderbolts and Captain America, Brave New World. On screen two, we have A Minecraft Movie and The Legend of Ochi. On screen three, we have Sinners and Companion. And then on screen four, we have The Accountant 2 and A Working Man. And if you're interested in any of those showtimes or any additional information, you can find out more at highwaydrivein.ny.com. And that's HIWAY drivein.ny.com. Last but not least, I'm going to tell you about what's playing at Upstate Films this week, starting with the Star Cinema, which is the location in Rhinebeck. We have One to One, John and Yoko, The Wild Party, On Swift Horses, The Legend of Ochi, Gazer, I Like It Here, Close Up with director Ralph Arlick, Pink Floyd at Pompeii, Drop Dead City, and April. And then heading back over to the other side of the river at the Orpheum Theater located in Saugerties, we have Community Conversation, Balanced Growth, Secret Mall Apartment, The Ballad of Wallace Island, The Legend of Ochi, Failsafe, a favorite of mine, Pink Floyd at Pompeii, Bjork, Cornucopia, John Thurstino's What We Will Be staged reading, Thunderbolts, Sinners, Cheech and Chong's last movie, and The Shrouds. And if you're interested in any of those movies or events or their showtimes, you can find out more information at upstatefilms.org. That's all for the movie times this week, for the week of May 13th in the Hudson Valley. Amanda and I are still away, which you might have figured out from me talking about how I'm here in the desert instead of in our beautiful, lovely home. So today, instead of our usual, we're going to be playing an old broadcast. This is an episode from 2023, where we talked about movies relating to serendipity, coincidence, and chance. Give it a listen if you don't remember it, or maybe you do, and that's okay too. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Wow. it's the beginning of the blockbuster season, kind of. Summer's coming for us.
I feel it.
It's coming down the pike. We're going to have some great flicks coming our way.
It's all happening.
The plants are blooming. The sun is shining. Hello, Fast bang. X is playing soon.
It's so exciting.
Can you believe it?
I really want to see Gods of Mexico, too.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Looks great.
Yeah. There's a lot of great movies out.
I know.
They just never stop.
I know.
As we say every time.
I wish they would stop just to let me catch up, but please. It's okay. I'm also glad
Give
that
me
they
a break.
Keep going. So tonight we have a theme that proved actually kind of difficult to find movies for. Jenny, what's our theme?
Our theme tonight is serendipity, coincidences, chance.
Exactly.
You know, when weird things are happening and they all seem to have some form of alignment. And it's like, I thought this was random, but it turns out it's all connected.
Yeah, maybe destiny is real. I found this difficult to find movies for because most stories involve an element of chance as a plot device or a way to like get a story going. So I really tried to find movies that were really, really about chance.
Yeah.
or coincidence or serendipity. Which is hard. They're out there, but I only managed to get in two in the time that we had leading up to this show. But they were okay.
Yeah. I watched two, and then I tried to watch one last night, and I didn't make it all the way to the end.
Mm-mm.
So I don't even know how connected it all was, frankly.
Yeah. I know. The one I watched, I also watched one last night at a time that was too late for this little big baby. And I think it counts, but it also... It ain't perfect. It's no Magnolia.
Well, since you brought it up.
Let's go.
So the first movie I watched for this theme was Magnolia, Paul Thomas Anderson's movie from 1999, a great year for mm-hmm. film, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
I had never seen it before, but had always wanted to. Also, please allow me to take this moment to disclaim that Brasskill is playing in the room next to us.
Yes, there is a brass band that is beloved by the community and myself, but they are practicing in the room next to us. And so when that happens, we tend to get a little distracted during our broadcast.
The beat just takes us away. We can't help it.
Exactly.
It's too groovy.
So I'm hearing those horns. We're hearing those horns just bumping next door. They sound great. They're great because they practice.
Makes all bands great to practice.
Exactly. There's only one way to get to Carnegie Hall, baby.
Whoa, wait, how?
Kidding. Wow. I'm so gullible. It's like Carnegie Hall. Practice, Jenny.
Practice is like the joke. But
yeah, so, and then we're also like a little unprepared for this one.
All right. You don't have to, I know. You don't got to show our hand like
I
that.
I feel like being honest so I can be closer to our listening
you're
audience.
You're right. It's good to be honest.
But let's just say it's the brass band. So tell me about Paul Thomas Anderson's Magnolia, which I have seen, was going to rewatch for this, but I try to watch things I've never seen.
Yeah, totally.
So I didn't rewatch it.
It's also a bit of a commitment because it is 3 hours and 10 minutes long.
It's long.
Which is absolutely needed for the really complicated story it's telling.
Yeah.
It's one of those movies that as soon as I finished it, I was like, I need to watch this again to really understand it because I feel like there's so much going on that I'm missing a lot of it. And I can tell
mm-hmm.
that it's a masterpiece
mm-hmm.
as it's like washing over me. Mm-hmm. But even so, I feel like I'm not quite grasping it as well as I want to. Like I like all the individual elements so much that I'm like, I want to see this again so that I can really like fully soak in it.
Exactly. It's a huge undertaking to tell a story that is it's a bunch of interwoven characters, like that's the story, or the basis of it is like interweaving storylines. A huge undertaking. PT very capable, did a great job. It's no Phantom Thread.
It's I mean, like, no movie is Phantom Thread.
Exactly. Like it's I think it's a great movie. I don't think it's one of PT's best.
It's also one of his earliest.
Yes.
It's like he got, it's kind of like he had such success with Boogie Nights that the studios were just like, sure, do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And so what I learned, I did a little bit of reading about Magnolia immediately after I watched it,
because
I was like, I have so many questions. And one of the things I saw was that like it went way long on filming, like way longer than it was supposed to, because he just kept having more ideas and had to add all of these things in to like make the story complete.
It has that energy to it,
right? Where it's like, and because it is all of these interlocking stories that have these like coincidental moments of like connection, it makes sense that he was like, oh, I was writing this one story and then I realized I had to tell this other bigger story, which just to give you like, I'm going to do my best to give you a basic,
yeah,
like the most basic understanding of this movie because it's impossible to summarize. I read the Wikipedia page again just to check and I was like, I mean, even this isn't a perfect summary, frankly.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
But it takes place in Los Angeles in the San Fernando Valley. And the whole movie is framed by these three stories of extreme chance. Mm-hmm. Where, I mean, they're all really sad stories of extreme chance. And or maybe it's only two.
I can't remember.
But one of them is about a fire that's being put out. A man is scuba diving and he gets scooped up by the big airplanes that dump water on the fire. And he's killed he dies of a heart attack while he's inside of the plane that scoops up the water.
Yeah.
And they find him at the top of a tree after the fire is put out. And it turns out that he's played by Patton Oswalt and he's a dealer at a casino. And one of the firefighters, or no, I'm so sorry, the pilot of the plane had played at his blackjack table the night before. And so he, like, tragically commits suicide because of the guilt.
Yeah.
He's like, I knew that man, and I scooped him up in my plane and dropped him over the fire.
Oh,
and it's so, and it's like, starts with that, and then another sad coincidence story of a young man who also wishes to commit suicide by jumping off of the roof of his building. But as he's jumping, he would have landed safely in a net, but his parents are having an argument in the third floor down and they accidentally shoot a gun out the window and kill him as he's falling.
Yes, that, so it's, I, like, do remember.
It's like
wild.
These two really weird specific coincidences that are like have tragic consequences where like you simply could not have known the scope of the story. Like there's no, like nobody involved could have done anything to change it.
It's truly extreme coincidence.
And so like that's the frame narrative of the movie to kind of get you set up with these like looking for these coincidences in mind. And then for most of the movie I kind of like forgot that because you get so engrossed in all
of
these
kind
characters.
Of the prologue, like those characters never reappear.
Right. It's just a little piece, just a little taste.
Mm-hmm.
And so you are just watching all of these different characters who are all living in the San Fernando Valley, the one of whom, who I think like they really wanted to be, or not they, but like the studios really wanted to market as like the main character. And Paul Thomas Anderson was like, no, he's not the main character. It's an ensemble piece, which it truly is. But Tom Cruise plays a very memorable role as a like pickup artist,
like a men's rights.
He's like a men's rights motivational speaker, mm-hmm. but like with the energy of a pickup artist. Like he's yeah. giving men tips on how to trick women into having sex with them.
Yeah.
And he is incredible.
He's so good.
I
remember most about Magnolia because again, like so much to remember about it and it's been years, but the performances stick out so well.
They're so good. I think Tom Cruise won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor
for that role. I'm pretty sure. Incredible.
Yeah, because it is. He's so good in it. It's just, especially here in hindsight, like knowing that Tom Cruise is like a really intense person.
Yeah.
He just gives such a good performance. But so you have like multiple stories. One is his. And then you find out later that one of the other storylines, which involves Julianne Moore, who mm-hmm. is married to this very ill man who's like dying of cancer, who's much older than her. It turns out that they are connected because he is Tom Cruise's father,
mm-hmm.
but they're estranged from each other. So that's one other story. Those are two of the many storylines where like you're following Julianne Moore and this man who is dying, whose nurse is played by Philip Seymour Hoffman, who's also really good. And Julianne Moore is like going through her own emotional catharsis. So that's one piece.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have another piece, which is, it's also like star-studded. It's so crazy.
We got John C. Reilly up in
there. So John C. Reilly plays a police officer who is not great at his job, frankly. And he is repeatedly running into all of these different crimes that are going on, which like end up coming back in different ways in the movie. But he also has it's like almost a meet cute, except it's not that like innocent. He has like a really weird interaction with a young woman. The actor who is, let me pull that
up. I can't remember.
But she, so she is like, when we're introduced to her, she's like clearly struggling with a drug addiction. And she has a really estranged relationship from her father, who turns out to be the producer of a TV show, which we'll get back to that. but she, who is she? Oh, Melora Walters.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen her in some stuff before, but she's also great. So she has like a little like romance with John C. Reilly. And that's like another huge storyline that's taking up some time. That's really fascinating because they have like a very sweet relationship because they're both really troubled. Mm-hmm. They're really troubled in really different ways. Excellent foils to each other. And then so she's estranged from her father, who is the host of a game show, which is about kids competing with adults on trivia. It's kind of like a Jeopardy style, but it's like a panel of three children and a panel of three adults. It's called What Do Kids Know?
So good. So good.
And so he is the host of that, but he has also just found out that he's been diagnosed with cancer and is dying. And he is in a strange relationship with his daughter, who's the person having a romantic moment with John C. Reilly. And on this TV show, also, the next set of contestants in the story is one of the children on the panel is another main character named Stanley. And he is incredibly brilliant and he is like carrying the kid team to the top. But he also has a really contentious relationship with his father because his dad's really mean to him, even though he's like a genius kid and he's kind of like using him as a cash cow.
Yeah.
And this is all connected to the Tom Cruise story because Tom Cruise's estranged father. It's a movie about estranged fathers.
It's a bad dad movie.
It's a bad dad movie. It's like, oh, that's a great theme. We should do as bad
dads.
Yeah,
we have to do bad dads.
There's a lot of bad dads
in
movies.
There's so many bad dads.
But so this is all connected to Tom Cruise because Tom Cruise's estranged father is the producer of the television station.
Connected.
Like he's like, it's like Peacock Media or something, like as though it's NBC, you know?
Uh-huh.
And so you have all of these storylines. And then there's also one with William H. Macy, who's like a former kid from the show, What Do Kids Know? And he's now an adult, like struggling to come to terms with like, you know, not being famous anymore.
Right,
he's no longer, well, he's still famous, but he has no money and he has like no skills because he was just like a smart kid on a TV show. And now he's like a struggling adult who's like stealing from his boss.
Yeah.
And so you have all of these people who have this like very interconnected like web where they're all like they're all touching each other all the time in these different, like they're just brushing past each other. But you don't actually see any of them really interacting with each other. It's just this like, you know, one person's walking down a street and then like, you know, walks past something and then somebody else walks past that thing later. So it's like they're all interconnected. They're all kind of like touching the same stuff. And it's just a story about like it's kind of like 24 hours almost in LA where like everything's really weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Where it's like all it's a very interesting kind of like structure for a movie because it's a lot of like build up and then like deflation and then building it up again and then deflating it in this way that like keeps you occupied for 3 hours and 10 minutes but you're like kind of always waiting for something really crazy to happen.
Yeah.
And it doesn't until the very end, and then you do get something that like kind of brings all of them together in a major way.
Yeah.
Which is what I was waiting for. And also I'm like really shocked that nobody ever told me that that's how that movie, I'm just like impressed.
I don't even remember.
Oh, should I say it?
No. Okay. I mean, yeah.
Well, there's just a moment where all of a sudden a storm rolls in and a bunch of frogs have been picked up and they all get dropped on LA and it's raining frogs and it like messes everybody's situation up, but it also like kind of solves all their problems at once.
Amazing.
And it's so incredible. And I just was so impressed that like I've been meaning to watch this movie for years and nobody ever mentioned the frog rain.
I totally forgot about it. And it's funny too, because like much like incidences of it raining frogs, which like has been reported to happen before and like is proven, somewhat disproven, it's debated, right? So I think the two stories that are told in the prologue of that movie are also like said to be true,
right? Like this is a story of something that, but it's also you get during the Raining Frogs, like, it feels very mythical and unreal, but there's a scene of Stanley in the library who's the little kid, and he just, like, says quietly to himself, like, this is something that happens, because it's like he's read about it.
It's so good.
And a really fun thing that I found out when I was reading about Magnolia is that the guy who plays Julianne Moore's husband and Tom Cruise's dad, I believe it was him. It might have been the game show host, but I'm pretty sure it was him. He was talking to Paul Thomas Anderson after he read the script, and he was like, I was in a frog rain once.
Amazing. So, amazing.
And it's like, what a coincidence.
What a coincidence. Amazing job recapping Magnolia. Ooh. That was a real sprint.
Sorry, I know that was. It wasn't like a. It felt
heavy
really
lifting,
like
Herculean effort.
It wasn't like a perfect summary, but I feel like that's a really good basis of, like, just here. It's all of these different people who all have something in common with each other, but they don't know it. They also don't know that they're connected to each other, and that's part of what's so satisfying.
Yeah.
And they're also living in completely different worlds, even though they're all in the same neighborhood.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful movie.
It's so good. A really similar, and I was also maybe going to rewatch this movie for the show, and I didn't end up doing it, but a very similar, like, we're all interconnected in LA movie is Robert Altman's mm-hmm. Shortcuts.
Yeah.
Which is also a fantastic movie, but really those movies feel very different, Shortcuts and Magnolia, because, I mean, Shortcuts is far more comedic, but it's also, in very Altman style, like, the peaks that you get into people's lives are a lot less intimate. Mm-hmm. They're not cursory, but they're a lot less in depth. So again, like, it's far less tragic.
Yeah. I was really surprised by how dark Magnolia is. Like, yeah. Everybody's at, like, a crisis point in their lives, basically. Like, every character.
Yeah.
Which is not, like, it's not that I, like, Paul Thomas Anderson's movies are pretty dark, and they're also really funny. Yeah. And, like, Magnolia has a lot of humor to it, but I was surprised. I was like, this is very dramatic.
Yeah, it's really dramatic. And Shortcuts, it is more of, like, a zoomed out look at, like, mm-hmm. how funny these, like, we all live in a city, we're all so interconnected. It's more about that, or the scope isn't as microscopic.
Yeah,
or, like,
totally.
It's not as zoomed in. It's just more about the whole web and
right.
the funniness of all of it.
I love that.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's, and again, like, not, it's no lesser than Magnolia, but they are really different, because
right.
Magnolia takes more time to, I mean, it takes 3 hours
right.
to really go into everyone who's involved.
Right. They're doing different projects. Because also Magnolia is doing so much with, like, yeah, with, like, trauma.
Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
Generational trauma and, like, yeah, bad dads.
Exactly. And Shortcuts takes on a more, like, anthology.
Yeah,
kind
totally.
Of look. Yeah, it's really fun. Wow. I'm really happy that you finally watched Magnolia.
I'm so glad.
It is kind of the number one candidate for this theme.
Yeah, totally. It's when you Google movies about coincidence, it's like, have you heard about Magnolia?
Magnolia is it's the movie for it.
It's like they talk about it explicitly in the flick.
Yep. So where can you watch Magnolia right
so
now?
It's only available for renting right now. It's $2.99 if you want to rent it.
All right.
Well worth it for 3 hours. Yeah, over 3 hours.
Exactly.
That's less than $1 a minute. Or $1 an hour.
It's $1 an hour.
It's very affordable.
So, like I said, I had a hard time finding movies for this episode that were truly as good of a fit as Magnolia, because there are many movies that could apply, but it really just starts with a coincidence rather than being steeped in coincidence. Mm-hmm. Technically, like, most rom-coms are, like,
right.
Pretty Woman,
like, pretty much all meet cutes start
yeah,
with a coincidence.
Exactly. So I started out watching the John Cusack movie Serendipity, but I stopped because it sucks.
It's not good.
I was like, this isn't a Hallmark movie. That's insane, because it
so
has
brutal.
That vibe.
Yeah.
But I did watch a rom-com for it, which, again, like, it was a better fit, but still not quite right. I mean, nothing's going to fit like Magnolia does. Or not nothing, but, you know,
mm-hmm.
Magnolia
I'm
really fits.
I'm dying to know what you watched.
I watched a movie from 1994 called It Could Happen to You, starring Nicolas Cage, favorite of the show, and Bridget Fonda, and Rosie Perez.
Cute.
And Wendell Pierce.
Oh my gosh.
And Nicolas Cage is a New York City cop from Queens called Charlie Lang. Mm-hmm. And he loves his job. He loves his life. He's a real good cop. This is fiction, people. but he is, you know, as far as we witness, as the audience goes, he is a good guy. He plays stickball in the street with the neighborhood kids at night. He's friends with everybody in the area that he patrols. His best buddy is his partner, Bo, who's played by Wendell Pierce. They have a great relationship. He is a solid stand-up guy, and he loves his life. He doesn't want anything different. His wife, however, Rosie Perez, whose name is Muriel, she wants money. She is into the glam life. That's what she wants. She doesn't like living in Queens. She doesn't like the little apartment. Charlie's perfectly happy, but she is not. She wants to be a celeb, basically. So one day, Charlie, Nicolas Cage, goes into a diner where we run into our second main character, Bridget Fonda, who is Yvonne. And Yvonne is having one of the worst days of her life. She used to be an actor, and she was in a relationship with another actor played by Stanley Tucci. Ooh. Who we didn't really need to know his character's name. He's just supposed to be like...
he's Stanley Tucci.
Yeah, he's the schmuck ex.
Yeah.
So they were married, and she can't get a divorce because it's too expensive to get a divorce, quite simply. And she earlier in her day was at the courts filing for bankruptcy, unfortunately, because she can't afford the divorce. She's can't afford anything. She's like maxed out on her credit cards. She is really down on her luck, and she's a diner waitress, and her boss is terrible, really nasty. But she is clearly, much like our main character, or our other main character, Charlie, is very, very kind, loves people, loves the people she is around every day. So Charlie and his partner go for coffee there. They got to leave before their food comes, and so he's getting the bill just for the coffees, and he has enough to cover the coffee, but he doesn't have enough for a tip. And she's like, whatever, man, I'm having the worst day of my life. Like, yeah, just get it. It's on you. Fine. It's like, on me, yeah. Officer, whatever. Just get out of here. And he's like, no, like, that's not my vibe. I'm a good guy. And earlier in the day, he, at his wife Muriel's request, had bought a lottery ticket based on a dream that she had.
Yes.
And he's like, all right, how about this? If I win the lottery, I'll come back and I'll split it with you.
Whoa.
And if I don't win it, I'll just come back tomorrow and give you your tip. And she's like, yeah, okay, literally whatever.
Come on, weirdo, man. Just pay
me. Get out of here. And I should mention, too, that Rosie Perez, Muriel, told her husband to select these certain numbers based on her dream. And one of the numbers was the day of their wedding, or what she thought of their anniversary. Mm-hmm. But they have two, kind of, because they were married in the court the day before. So Charlie picks a different date than the one she had in mind. And he gets home, he gives her the ticket, and she's like, you picked the wrong numbers, you bobo. She's
really, do you even love me?
Yeah, she's really mean to him. And then the numbers are red. They win the lottery,
the
baby.
Right,
it could happen to you.
It could happen to you.
And because, even though this is insane, because he is a man of his word, he is, and Rosie Perez is reasonably pissed when he's like, yeah, we have to split the money.
It's like, what? It's not like she knows.
Yeah, exactly. We have to split the money with this random waitress. But because he's a man of his word and goes through with it, despite Rosie Perez's protests, he goes back to Bridget Fonda and he splits the money with her. And because of that, they become famous. It's a very, like, New York story.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
We're getting a lot of New York headlines.
Yes. Oh, God, yeah. I love that stuff.
New York Post headlines.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a rom-com. Most of the movie is about, like, Nicolas Cage and Bridget Fonda realizing that they're far more similar to each other than, you know, Nicolas Cage and his wife, Muriel, Rosie Perez, who is just about spending that money. You know, every time Nicolas Cage, like, will give some money to a homeless person, and Rosie Perez, like, whips it back out of the cup.
Oh, my God.
She's like, she's a really greedy person. She's loving her moneyed life. So, like, how am I going to wrap this up? So, rom-com, whatever.
Do they fall in love?
They fall in love. They fall in love, and Muriel realizes that's what's going on. Mm-hmm. She divorces Nicolas Cage, mm-hmm. and she just gets worse and worse as a person. She's like, I'm going to take all of the money because I'm the one who wanted you to get the ticket. And I'm going to take all the money that you promised to that woman.
Whoa, Rosie.
Yeah. So she becomes our true villain through the public court hearings and all that. You know, people, they unfortunately lose the court case. Mm. They lose all their money, but they have each other.
That's great.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And everybody in New York is rooting for their love.
Aww.
They're all rooting for their love. And because they're so beloved and such generous people, there's like the heartwarming moment at the end of the movie where all these people all over send little bits of money to them.
The first crowdfund.
Yeah.
First crowdfund.
Exactly. Like going viral, getting yeah. crowdfunded. They don't ask for it, but yeah. all of a sudden, you know, they're like, all right, we're bankrupt. So originally when Bridget Fonda was given the money, she bought the diner mm-hmm. that she Aww. Was working at. And then she's, you know, they lose all their money. So she's losing the diner. They're like, Nicolas Cage is like, I have a brother up in, cousin up in Buffalo. Like, we can just move there. Like, you know, it'll be okay. So the how everybody finds out about their unending kindness, even in the face of this big downfall, is we have a kind of Clarence the Angel type mm-hmm. narrator. Mm-hmm. Isaac Hayes
oh.
is, I forget his character's name, but he's kind of a narrator of the story and an undercover journalist who, while Nicolas Cage and Bridget Fonda are having their last night in the diner before they can, they have to just get
goodbye.
Out of this town that knows about all of their troubles, Isaac Hayes' character comes dressed as a man down on his luck, asking for a bowl of soup. And they're like, of course, come in. Because she, you know, Bridget Fonda at her diner had a table set up just for that, for people who couldn't afford to
eat. She's a good lady.
She's a good lady and she loves to give, yeah. just like Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
And he secretly takes pictures of them.
Oh my God.
being sweet and being generous, even when they have nothing. And so that's when everybody sends in the
they
money because Isaac Hayes writes an article about it. And they get $600,000 accumulatively from all those New Yorkers.
Wow. That's
you
beautiful.
Know, it's New York, baby. We look out for each other.
What a funny,
yeah.
almost internet age movie that it, like, it's obviously it isn't because it's from the 80s.
Yeah.
But it has crowdfunding and undercover pranking.
Yeah. Yeah. it's obviously extremely simple.
Yeah, totally.
But very sweet. You know, it's not steeped in coincidence quite as much as Magnolia is, but at least you have, you know, like,
I mean,
you have the Isaac Hayes character who is but a journalist, but also kind of this angelic figure that, like, there you get that figure that's kind of aware of the
totally,
wheel.
Totally. Yeah. And I mean, you know, I always love a lottery number that comes up and it's like, what are the odds?
Yeah, exactly.
It could happen to you.
This movie was directed by Andrew Bergman and written by Jane Anderson. I did not look up their other work. And this is also based on a, oh yeah. So, okay. Jane Anderson wrote like some kind of other fun, cheesy 90s movies, like How to Make an American Quilt and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
This movie is semi based on a true story, about, here it comes, the true story of Phyllis Penzo and Officer Robert Cunningham. For 24 years, Penzo served as a waitress at Sal's Pizzeria in Yonkers. Cunningham, a 30-year veteran of the police force in nearby Dobbs Ferry, was a regular customer at the restaurant, well-liked by the staff there. His favorite dish was linguine with clams.
Yes.
on one day, March 1984, Cunningham asked Penzo for help picking his weekly lottery numbers. Penzo suggested three numbers, and Cunningham came up with three more numbers.
Cute.
Cunningham joked that if he won, he would split the winnings. The next day, he did win, and they did split the money.
That's so sweet.
Yeah,
I love
really
that.
Sweet.
It's a collaboration, baby.
They didn't fall in love in real life because they were both happily married, but it's
fine,
very
I guess.
Sweet that this, you know. Yeah, they were
wow.
true to the promise.
It's a great seed for a story.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
It's a real story about karma.
Yeah, totally.
That
yeah.
kind of stuff.
Yeah. You'll get what's coming to you.
Yeah. Yeah, because yeah, of course, Rosie Perez does not end up well.
Right, totally.
She marries a rich dude who is a scammer and steals her money.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
Yeah.
Which, you're too greedy.
When I'm thinking about Rosie Perez, it makes me sad. But when I think about her, character, Muriel, like,
she's,
I'm like,
bad.
She's nasty.
She's nasty.
She's not nice. So that's if it could happen to you from 1994, which is also only available for purchase right now. But was it worth the $3.99? Maybe not. But it's hard to find. And if you like rom-coms, it's cute.
You know, to some, it may be worth it. I think it's worth, you know, if that sounded exciting to you, maybe it's a great thing to throw on in the evening while you're, like, knitting a scarf.
Yeah, when they still have the money before Muriel leaves Charlie, there's, like, a sweet scene where he takes all the neighborhood kids from his neighborhood in Queens to Yankee Stadium.
Oh.
So they all get to play ball in Yankee Stadium.
I mean, with that cast, it's, like, it's just fun to hang out with them for an hour and a half, you know?
Exactly.
I'm having a good time.
Exactly. Everybody looks cute.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was the first one I watched.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. I also watched a silly rom-com. So this is an excellent segue. I was, when you started talking about it, I was like, did we watch the same one? But no, different.
Ooh.
A different rom-com. I watched Sliding Doors, a movie which I like. I feel like I reference the term Sliding Doors all the time, but I kind of, I knew it was a movie, but I didn't know anything about it. So I was like, it's time to watch it.
I have heard about this movie. I feel like I vividly remember the cover from it.
Mm-hmm. And the two Gwyneths.
Yes, it did also end up on my list, but I missed it. Tell me about Sliding Doors.
Please allow me. It's from 1998. Also a real sweet spot for rom-coms.
Yes, it is.
It's streaming on HBO. Let me just get that out of the way now in case you want to watch it tonight.
Just press play right now. Don't even listen.
Don't worry. You don't need to hear me talk about it. It stars Gwyneth Paltrow doing her best British accent. She's kind of doing a bit of a Keira Knightley thing, obviously pre-Keira Knightley, but I was like, oh, interesting, like that's how you get a British accent out, is to like do like a strong jaw.
Funny.
But so it's about her. She works as a PR person at a fashion agency, and she arrives to work one morning only to be sacked because she took home some vodka for her birthday. And she didn't replace it in time. And so the execs didn't have anything to offer some people who were visiting in town. And so they decided to just fire her.
Oh, wow.
And so as she's leaving the office, she attempts to get on the train. But in one reality, she makes it. And in another reality, she doesn't make it to the train. The doors close on her. She can't get on.
This is a really, you picked a good one for this theme.
It is a perfect
that is
coincidence
on the money.
Theme. Yeah, it's a great, I mean, it's a great movie for this. It's not a great movie.
Yeah.
To be very clear. I just want to preface it with, it's pretty boring, but it's fine. I enjoyed my hour and a half that I spent watching it. But so in the reality where Gwyneth gets on the train in time, she meets a very nice man who is played by John Hannah, who you may recognize as the brother from The Mummy.
Oh, wow.
Who I actually quite like. I think he's quite good in this movie. He's pretty charming.
Nice.
And so the two of them strike up a conversation, even though she really doesn't want to talk to him. And he, but he's like, ah, come on, man. What's going on with you? Why are you so glum? And then he feels really bad when he finds out that she just got fired. And so, you know, they have a nice chat. They have like a little, like, they clearly are having a fun time talking to each other. And she gets off the train and she goes up to her apartment where she lives with her boyfriend, played by John Lynch, who I think is very hot. He is in The Terror. Minor character, if I'm going to tell you anyway.
Yeah,
he plays the like older guy with the big beard who's like a nurse.
Yeah.
He's not the like main doctor, but the other doctor.
Yeah.
I love him. I think he's really sexy.
I'm gonna look him up while you keep telling me about it.
But anyway, doesn't matter. That's a little thing for me. That's just a treat for Jenny.
Just a little Jenny treat.
But so she goes up to her apartment where she lives with her boyfriend, and what's happening? But he's got a lady over.
Oh, he's so hot.
He's so hot. I knew you would think so too.
Oh, yeah. No. He's like this. It's my bag, baby.
Yeah. That's
he looks like
bag.
A doggy.
He looks like a sheep dog. Yeah. And he's got like a very deep voice, and he's like very soft spoken in The Terror. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I love you.
Yeah. He's got doggy eyes.
Yeah. But so he's invited his ex over, and they are in a delicate position,
uh-oh,
to put it lightly and politely, for radio before 10 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And Gwyneth gets very upset, obviously,
yes,
and kicks her out. And she's so angry, and she leaves in a huff because she's like, I can't believe you do this to me. She breaks up with him. However, in the reality where Gwyneth doesn't make it on the train in time, She goes up to the street to catch a cab instead, and somebody tries to mug her, and she gets knocked down, and so she has to go to the hospital. And so she goes to the hospital, gets a little Band-Aid on her forehead because she got a little cut on her forehead. And then by the time she's out of the hospital and back to her apartment, her boyfriend, the woman that he invited over, she's already gone.
Yeah.
She's come and left.
Yeah.
And
she's none the wiser.
She's none. So Gwyneth gets there and she's like, oh, it's weird that you've been in bed all day, but like, fine, whatever. And they stay together. So then the movie becomes two movies where you're watching the side-by-side realities
the
of
whole time.
The entire time. What? You're watching half of the movie is Gwyneth after she's broken up with her boyfriend, and she's dealing with that. She gets a hot haircut, as you do when you break up.
Of course.
And she's spending a lot of time with her best friend, and she starts running into that guy that she met on the train again, and they strike up a little relationship. But then you're also watching what happens if Gwyneth doesn't know that her boyfriend's cheating on her.
Wait. I just want to be entirely crystal.
Yeah.
We're watching an entirely split screen movie.
No, it's not split screen.
Oh my god. Oh my. I was going to be like, that is one of the boldest choices I've ever heard of.
No.
A whole movie of split screen. Okay.
It would be so hard to watch. No. It goes like, it's like scene one with Gwyneth when she has the little. It's also like, because she gets the little cut on her head, that's how you tell the two apart for a while until she gets her hot haircut. And then it's like, okay, there's like the one with the hot haircut, and that's how you know she's the one who broke up, and the one who still has her old hair. Mm. And that's how you know that she's still dating her boyfriend who's a scumbag.
Okay.
And so you get like a scene of one of them, and then you get basically the same scene, but it's like, you know, their lives progress in different directions because she's made such a pivotal choice in one reality, and in the other reality, she doesn't get to make that choice.
Yeah.
And so it's like a really cool concept because it is just like, sliding doors. Like, what would happen if...
A multiverse movie.
It's literally a multiverse movie, except both universes are very boring. So it's like, it's kind of like, what's the point? Like, it's one that's really weird because it's like, it's such a fun concept. And I think it could work with... Frankly, my apologies to Gwyneth Paltrow, a more charming actress.
Yeah, no, she's really like, hard to love.
It's not, it's like, she just is such a, it's also, her character just isn't really given any personality traits. Like, she doesn't really have, like, both of the dudes that she's dating have more, like they do all the talking, kind of. Like, she's just a reactive character. She doesn't really have, like, an interior life. Mm-hmm. And so she's really hard to root for because you're just like, okay, like, it's cool that you broke up because it seems like you're happier. But also, like, you don't seem to like or care about anything.
Yeah.
So it's, like, hard to be invested in either of their relationships. But that being said, it's, like, a really cool concept for a rom-com because it is, like, what would happen if you caught your boyfriend cheating on you?
Ooh.
And it's, like, or what if you didn't? But it's, like, it just doesn't do anything with that choice.
No. Oh, man.
It's such a funny, like what? I will say the ending is a little more exciting because it's, like, the realities converge in a way where, like, something bad happens to both of them. Her name is Helen. Uh-huh. The character's name is Helen. And in the reality where she has not broken up with her boyfriend yet, she does find out he's cheating finally at the end of the movie.
Thank goodness.
And in her haste to get away, she falls down the stairs and falls into a coma.
Oh. My God.
And then in the other reality where she has undergone like an entirely separate rom-com with the guy that she met on the train, she has gotten angry with him and then they've made up and she's like crossing the street to go call somebody after they've like said I love you to each other and she gets hit by a van.
Oh.
It's like, Helen's not gonna make it, dude. I don't know if Helen's gonna make it. But like, great news, Helen
can't escape our fate.
Well, so yeah, that's kind of the story. Yeah, is like, you can't escape your
fate.
It's
written in the stars and it's written in stone.
It's written in stone. It doesn't matter if you're Gwyneth Paltrow or not.
My God. But so, either way, you're ending up in a coma.
It's gonna happen to you. You can't escape it.
Oh, this girl.
And so I will say, it concludes very neatly where like she gets out of both comas, she's fine, and in the reality where she waited a longer time to break up with her boyfriend, the movie ends with her getting into the elevator at the hospital, and who should be there but the guy from the other timeline because his mom's in the hospital. So they happen to be there at the same time. And then the movie ends with the with the sliding doors closing on them.
Oh, perfect. My God.
Perfect. So a perfect film.
So embarrassing. So I repeat, you can't change fate. Then.
You can't change fate. And then also over the credits, Thank You by Dido plays, just to be very clear.
Oh, and this is also from 1994.
1998. Okay, so a little bit later.
Okay. Wow.
But yeah, that's Sliding Doors. You don't need to watch it now because I told you about it.
I'm not going to. That's amazing. I mean, maybe I will. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe you'll like it.
Maybe if it was all split screen.
Yeah. I'm sorry. It took so long talking about it.
Two movies. No, don't be sorry at all. I don't have a ton to say about my last movie. I will jump right to it.
Yeah, take us there. Yeah.
Again, one that like popped up on lists about movies about chance coincidences or serendipity. And wasn't like a perfect fit. Not even as perfect as Sliding Doors. But I watched Jim Jarmusch's Night on Earth.
Oh.
Which is another anthology movie, much like Shortcuts, that is takes place in five different cities over one night, and it's all about cab drivers and the experiences they have with their fare.
Oh, perfect.
And so, I mean, it is a coincidence and chance movie because anytime we interact with another person, right, we're potentially involving ourselves with some kind of uncanny coincidence. And it's a lovely movie. It's an early one for Jarmusch. It is post Stranger Than Paradise and Down by Law. It's 1991. But so it's before like his big guys. Before Dead Man and Ghost Dog and Coffee and Cigarettes. And I'm not a big Jarmusch guy. Like I have really enjoyed a lot of his work. But I have never really felt the hype beyond when I was like a teenager and was like, yeah, Coffee and Cigarettes. but this one was really sweet, much like Down by Law. Like it had the humor in it is very Jarmusch-y and weird, but it's very sweet. So obviously huge cast as well, since we got an anthology, though each segment involves very few people since it's all taking place inside of a cab, basically. But we have A Night on Earth in L.A., New York, Paris, Rome, and Helsinki.
Whoa.
So our first segment is our cab driver is Winona Ryder, who's a real, like, tough, greasy gal who gives a ride to a talent agent who they meet by chance in the airport because Winona Ryder's just dropped somebody off. And this woman has just missed a ride or something, and they're both feeling down at the same moment. And yeah, this Gina Rowlands' character, who's the casting agent, takes this ride from Winona. And Winona is kind of like gruff and hard to hang with. She's like chain smoking in the cab and playing music when this lady's like on business calls. But it becomes clear that this woman, the casting agent, is looking for her boss, wants someone who's inexperienced and like the nerves of a paratrooper or something is said. And so at the end of the ride offers Winona Ryder they talk a little bit about their lives and then it's like, you know what? I think you're actually perfect for, I'm looking for someone who's just like you for this movie. And Winona Ryder's like, no, I'm exactly where I need to be like right now in my life. Cause like all she wants to be is a mechanic.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, no,
that rules.
I see that you're serious, but I'm good. So they're sweet little vignettes, right?
That's
the
so
next
nice.
One,
yeah.
The New York one is maybe my favorite because it stars Giancarlo Esposito and the actor Armin Mueller-Stahl, who I always think he's in so many things, including The X-Files. But he plays like the head of the Russian mob in Eastern Promises.
Oh, yeah.
He's
totally
a great actor. So Armin Mueller-Stahl plays a cab driver who's a German immigrant who is newly a cab driver and straight up doesn't know how to drive, and picks up Giancarlo Esposito, who's hailing for a cab in Manhattan but trying to get to Brooklyn. And I guess in the 90s, all these cab drivers are like, no, I don't want to take you to Brooklyn, dude.
Too far.
But Armin, whose character's name is Helmut, picks him up, and, you know, because Giancarlo can't find a ride, He has no choice but to go with this German guy who really can't drive. And so it's like, you know what? Stop the cab because you just don't know what you're doing.
I'm going to drive
and you'll just ride along with me. And like, they just have a really sweet conversation. They're both such good actors. Yeah. We find out that Giancarlo makes fun of Armin for being named Helmet. He's like, that's a crazy name in the United States. And then it turns out Giancarlo's character's name is Yo-Yo. And so they,
I love that. Yeah.
It's really sweet. The story is kind of bounced back and forth between being like, one is like a little more lighthearted. One is a little heavier. I can't talk about all of them. We don't have the time, but this one is lovely. Like, they make it to Brooklyn, and then of course, once Yo-Yo leaves, which, by the way, in this segment, is it a coincidence? We also get Rosie Perez.
Ah!
We pick up Rosie Perez.
What does it mean?
I know. Once Yo-Yo drops off Helmet, and you know, says, "You know how to get back, right?" Helmet, of course, has no idea.
And so
they've had this really sweet, lovely, lovely conversation. And then all of a sudden it really captures the loneliness of being in a city really well.
That's so sweet.
Because as soon as you're disconnected from this other human and this human moment and this kind of like little moment of care, Helmet is alone and lost.
He's thrown back into the deep end.
Yeah.
Oh, heartbreaking.
So I really enjoyed Night on Earth. It wasn't a mind-blowing movie, but it was really sweet and very, I like a slice of life movie.
Yeah, that sounds great.
And the performances were really lovely. The one that takes place in Rome has Roberto Benigni in
yes.
it, which, and it's very funny. Night on Earth is great, and it's streaming on HBO Max.
Oh, that's amazing. I've seen very few Jim Jarmusch movies, so I would like to hop in with something like that that's like a little more accessible to me.
Yeah.
A person
who's
very
accessible.
Not really into his vibe.
Yeah, very accessible. It feels very of its time.
Yeah,
like
totally.
The way that it is, slice of life and kind of like nothing terribly dramatic happens.
Love it. I love that stuff.
Yeah, it's good.
It's also just like, yeah, movies that are just about people having conversations. I feel like as long as the people having the conversations are compelling,
yeah,
it's so, you can watch it for hours.
Yeah.
It's like, I love this.
It's a good anthology. It's a totally, and there are not a lot of good anthology movies out there.
It's true. A lot of them are not good.
Yeah. And some of the better ones are the ones where it's all one director.
Yeah, totally. It makes more sense.
Just doing the vignettes. But yeah, it's a sweet one.
Oh, wow. Lovely. Well, this has been so lovely to be here with you.
Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Full of chance. What luck, let me say instead, that we're here together on the radio.
You know, it's no coincidence.
It's no coincidence. This is fate.
Yeah. This has been Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda. We're here every second and fourth Tuesday of the month from 7 to 8 p.m. here on WGXC. Acra 90.7 FM.
Yeah, you can find us on Instagram at Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda, all one word. And we'll be back in just about 2 weeks.
Yep.
With our next stuff.
Good night, y'all.
Thank you. the state.